yesterday. Just by accident, because you never know who is listening to this program. We heard from members of the family of Major Davis Jr., the accused killer of officer, IMPD officer Wren. And so we heard the family side of the story. And we were hoping yesterday to hear the police side of the story from Rick Snyder, who is the vice president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Lodge 86. But he had a little bit more important responsibilities yesterday, and that was attending the homegoing of a police officer in Tipton, Indiana, who God called home from his service to that community. Rick Snyder now is on our live line, and he joins me. Rick, how you doing?
Well, I wish I was doing better than what we're going through right now, Amos, but thanks for having us on.
Let me first ask, how is Mrs. Wren and the Wren family?
I think it's safe to say, as could be expected, mm-hmm. they are in complete shock and in this time of being overwhelmed with the entire situation. However, we have a very good support team, excellent support team, from the Fraternal Order of Police that and Concerns of Police Survivors that will be with them every step of the way through this process, and even more importantly than that, every step here on after as they try to put the pieces of their lives back together.
And I understand that law enforcement agencies from the biggest cities in this country to the smallest towns have sent notes to the FOP. They've sent notes to IMPD. They've sent notes to the family. Is this a larger outpouring than you've seen, Rick?
It is I would say it's the normal outpouring that you see. Mm-hmm. We speak of the law enforcement profession as being a family. The meaning behind that is that we all feel a loss like this, mm-hmm. And frankly, it's because every single police officer and their families know that this could have been them,
mm-hmm.
and we fully appreciate because we do it, but we fully appreciate the risk that we take every single day. Just by going to work, trying to serve our communities.
I've been here now in Indianapolis long enough to remember when police action shootings and officers losing their life in the line of duty was averaging maybe one a year. We've had two in less than a 12-month period, and I understand the attacks on officers that don't result in any kind of fatality or hospitalization is on the rise. I believe you described it in terms of, I may not have the words correctly, and if I say them incorrectly, please correct me, that it is a danger, it's dangerous out there. How would you describe from the officer's point of view, the danger in this county?
Well, I fully appreciate what the chief of police said yesterday, mm-hmm. which is it's not just our police department that's under attack. Our entire city is under assault.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very true. You've been around long enough, Amos, and I'm sure you could attest to this, but many of our folks who have been around for many, many years here will tell you they've never seen anything like this.
Mm-hmm.
And for our officers who are going out there every single day, it literally is like the Wild West out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you hear frustration in my voice, it's because, you know, I've been on your show a couple of times,
right,
talking about these issues and the crisis,
mm-hmm.
that is not only coming, but that we are in right now. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes tragic events for us to fully feel the impact of that. And I mean, let's face it, there's a lot of tragic events. We had 11 people shot in that same 24-hour period.
Right.
One of which had died, and that was a police officer,
mm-hmm.
who is the absolute fabric that holds our society together. These are guardians of our city. And Amos, you know this.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't anybody else out there. This is it. This is all we got. And when somebody attacks one of our guardians of the city, it's much bigger than just that individual officer. it's an attack on our entire city.
One of the things that I said on the air yesterday, and I put out a challenge to the Indianapolis Star and to the television stations, and I mean, they've been doing the coverage of this event and the coverage of law enforcement and the coverage of the families. But I hope that we don't lose sight of, and I know we've talked a lot about illegal guns. And to be honest with you, Rick, somebody in IMPD's PR department told, as we were talking yesterday, to make sure that I had the facts straight of what happened so that I could recount it to the audience accurately. I was floored to find out that you don't need a permit in Indiana to carry the kind of firepower or weapon that Mr. Davis had. And I got to say allegedly, because everybody legally is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. But I was stunned that you could legally carry that kind of firepower. That's crazy to me.
Well, I don't want to talk about the specifics of the incident, given all the necessary steps that have to occur related to that. But what I'll say is this. Let's just talk about the illegal use of firearms in our city.
Mm-hmm.
We sometimes get lost in the weeds of this whole the whole gun debate. Let's take a chunk of it and just focus on the illegal possession and the illegal use of it, the violation of the laws that occur now.
Mm-hmm.
And if we would place a focus on that and talk about the enforcement of the laws that we have now, we can debate another day how many more laws we need.
Right.
But if we're not enforcing the ones we have now, there's nothing to say that we're going to enforce the ones that come down the pike. And on top of that, Amos, every time we talk about enforcing these laws or creating new laws, we have to remember that there is somebody that has to enforce it. And invariably, you know, we've seen this discussion now, and I've seen people say, you know, hiring more cops is not the only solution here. It's not going to solve this problem. It may not be the sole solution, but I'm going to tell you, it's a big portion of it, because every other solution that's proposed invariably comes back to the use of police officers.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have enough to do the job that we're doing now, you definitely won't have enough to do the additional things we're going to ask of them. And Amos, that's really the point that we're at right now,
right?
Is what are we as a community going to, we've had the community conversations.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of talks. We've talked about what we should do, what we could do, what ideas are out there. We now need to decide what is it that we're doing and do it. And we don't have time. You know, I'm quite fond of saying Indy can't wait. We cannot wait any longer.
And I know you're joining Public Safety Director Riggs and Chief Hyde at 3 o'clock today.
That's correct.
Is that announcing a formal proposal, or is this setting the groundwork that we now in this city and county need to have a very serious, grown-up, adult conversation of, you know, how many men and women do we need, how much is that going to cost, and how do we pay for that?
Well, in fairness, first of all,
yeah. I don't want you to show all the cards and save that for 3 o'clock.
What it's going to be is it's going to be placing the factual situation in front of the public,
mm-hmm.
and asking the public to decide what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of having a serious discussion of how many officers do we need and how we're going to fund it and all those things, in fairness, that's already occurred. It happened with the IMPD Staffing Commission.
Yeah.
You had a unanimous bipartisan recommendation to hire hundreds of police officers, 500 over the next 5 years, said that we had to have them. The chief of police, Chief Height, went in and said, if you want this level of police service that you've grown accustomed to, I need hundreds more officers.
Mm-hmm.
And we were united in that position, because the facts are the facts.
Right.
So the chief has made it very clear he can no longer provide the same level of service without the necessary resources.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have to say that discussion's occurred. What are we as a community going to do about it? And the community has to say, yes, we are going to take on and fund more resources, including more police officers,
right.
Or no, we're not. But we also have to understand that if we don't, that means we're going to reduce services. That's the only option we have.
Is this also part of the debate, and I think a lot of residents of this city do not understand, that we have asked the men and women of IMPD since the merger to have to cover a territory, and let's leave out for 5 seconds Speedway, Lawrence, Beech Grove, and Southport. you guys have to cover an area almost as big as New York City. With 1,600 folks, and New York City's got what, 13,000? Last time, they got like...
They have nearly 40,000.
40,000. See, I was out
of here's the situation. Yeah. Excluding those cities and towns, our geographic area that we're responsible for is 372 square miles.
Hmm.
That's larger than the area of Chicago that they patrol. It's you can fit three cities of Detroit into our patrol area.
Hmm.
So it's massive. It's very unique.
Yeah.
Under this merged police department. And we are doing it, Chief Height himself has said, we are doing the work of 3,000 with 1,500. Now, the testament in all of this is the only reason why it's worked thus far is because of these women and men who go out there and serve faithfully every single day for our city.
Hmm.
Like Officer Wren, who faithfully, for 22 years, worked the area of the Meadows. Now, Amos, that takes a special person. He didn't want to go somewhere else. He wanted to stay there and make a difference.
He had opportunities to transfer and say, hey, send me out to 86th Street where it's calm and quiet.
And those days are gone.
Mm-hmm.
It's violent and critical everywhere because, and this is what I talk about, we have a vacuum here. Evil knows and goes to the path of least resistance. That's why you're seeing the criminal element from all over the country, different states, different cities, making a home here in Indianapolis. Because they understand that we are in a compromised position. When you're doing, when you have half the number of people you need, even when they're doing the very best they can only do so much. And that's the point. We've asked them since the merger to continue to do more with less. We've crossed the threshold. We can now only do less with less.
Should we also have a policy as a city that if the city grows, law enforcement has to grow? If we look at how many people lived in Marion County at the time UniGov was created, that's about 797,000 people.
Correct.
We now have 928,000. By my public school math, we've grown 131,000 in 40 years.
Yes, sir.
And we've got, what, a couple of hundred, I think, is the count, if we counted old sheriff and old IMPD from back in the day, less now than we had then?
Yes.
So my math is we got less officers and a gugob full more people. And they weren't all kids.
Correct. So I think one could suggest that what you're putting forward there is a common sense approach. However, what we keep routinely being reminded of is that common sense is the least common of all senses. You have various decisions that are made that we, you know, for whatever reason, that we'll try to get by with not maintaining the police force that we should have. And you know what? When we make those decisions, that comes home to roost. And that's what we're seeing. And in fairness, it's what we've been talking about for the last 2 years. Our officers are on the front lines. They're seeing it before anyone else. And for 2 years now, they've been saying, through the FOP as their mouthpiece,
right,
this is coming, and we gotta stave this off because there will be serious consequences, and you're seeing it. 11 shootings in 24 hours,
mm,
a mass shooting on Broad Ripple Avenue. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have people that still want to sit around and debate whether or not we need to invest more in our public safety. While we debate it, the only constant that there is that we continuously continue to lose police officers. And, through retirement, normal attrition, now as we've seen critical injuries or death,
mm-hmm,
and we're not replacing them. And, we can argue back and forth, is there a direct parallel between more cops and, less crime? Well, what I would suggest to you is just let me ask you this question. If nobody wants to stipulate that we need more cops, would they then put forward that we need less cops? Would we be safer by having less cops than what we have now out on the street? I think most people understand that's foolish. But that's what we're doing when we're not making a decision and acting.
One of the things you said, and I had to read it a couple of times just to make sure that I really understood it, you kind of said, and I'm paraphrasing, that we don't have enough officers to do everything that we need. Maybe we don't need to concentrate right now on community policing. We need to get back to the basics. I'm paraphrasing what you said. If I mischaracterize
it. Here's what's important to understand.
Okay.
We are huge proponents of community policing. We've put forward a community policing model that's called EPIC.
Right.
It's a designed plan for how to do true proactive community policing. We fully support it. In our minds, it's a must.
Mm-hmm.
However, we've also been very clear. That takes more resources to do that. If we don't have those resources, we're left with being a purely reactionary police force, which is what we've been doing for years now. And now we're to the point of we have nowhere else to cut, nowhere else to go and get extra officers to put on the street. And so now we're left with we can't continue to do the services that we've been doing. That means that officers that we have in schools, we're going to have to pull them from there. That means that officers that are coming to the Crime Watch programs that are so vitally important in our city,
right.
We don't have the luxury of sending those officers. We have to now prioritize what we're going to do. And again, I'm telling you, it's a crisis. Your chief of police has said that the city is under assault. It's under attack.
Does that also mean that if somebody's doing a bicycle run or they're doing a walk run and there's 8, 9, 10, 15, 20 IMPD officers, even if they're working off duty for that person, let the sheriff have that contract. You know, we need our guys to have their rest on their off days so they can be ready to do their regular job.
Well, here's what we're seeing. Even when we try to get officers to come back and fill voids that we have,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough to get them to come in and work those extra hours, even paying them overtime to do that because they're so wore out.
Mm-hmm.
They need downtime. It's just like troops in battle. You can only stay on the front line so long and then you have to go back and rehab. And we are burning our workforce out. And I would suggest to you that's why you see some of the dilemmas that we face. And Chief Hite's been very articulate on this matter of we've ran our police officers into the ground and then we wonder why we see some of the outcomes that we see in terms of, alcohol and chemical dependency, broken families, all of these things, suicide rates in the policing profession.
Is it fair to say that it's similar to our combat troops doing multiple tours in Iraq and Afghanistan and some of the problems that they have exhibited?
Absolutely, and let me take it one step further. Obviously, it doesn't get any better than somebody going and serving their country, especially abroad in battle. But think about this. You have folks who come on to this job and they do it day in and day out for 32 years. You know, and like we were just talking about, Amos, Officer Wren, 22 years of daily going and serving the community in the Meadows area. That takes a toll on people after a while. That's a lot to ask of somebody, both physically, but also emotionally and also spiritually, which you know we've talked about as well with our police officers. Continue to work on that.
We're with Rick Snyder, Vice President of FOP Lodge 86. Obviously, let's say everybody agrees, let's do it. We all buy lottery tickets, we hit the lotto, we turn all the money over to the city, we hire new cops. It still takes a while to get those officers on the street. Mayor, I know you all are hit. You're going to have FOP people up in Gary in terms of the homegoing of that officer tragically assassinated this week. Mayor Freeman Wilson asked for state police help, and the governor granted her that. Are we at a point in this short-term crisis where our mayor needs to ask our governor for state police help?
Well, what I've heard the director of public safety say is that would be something that he would have to hear from his chief, saying that was needed. And what I can tell you, and I think it's the point that you're trying to make too, that's even if that were the case, that's just a short-term solution.
Yeah.
And this is what I would say to you, Amos, and I've had this conversation with our U.S. senators, our elected congressman, Congressman Carson, and Congresswoman Brooks, Senator Donnelly, Senator Coates, where we, the FOP, have actually gone to Washington, D.C., met with those elected representatives and said, we did this last year, last July, and said, this is coming, what can you do to help us?
Mm-hmm.
Now here's the issue though, in fairness, when you go to the federal government, or you go to the state, or you seek other resources, it's only fair that they ask you, what have you done to invest in yourself before you come to us?
Mm-hmm.
And what we have shown is that we haven't. We've allowed our agency to fall and deplete to this point. And it becomes tough to go asking people for help when you're not willing to help yourself. And that's the point of where we are right now. Our community has to say, is it worth the investment of the additional dollars to get our police force to where it needs to be? And then if we do that, then we would be better positioned to go and ask for help from other people. But that's going to require some tough decisions, but tough times call for that. And unless we significantly cut spending somewhere else in the budget, and most people would tell you they don't want to see that done, but unless we do that, the only other option is to increase revenues. And then that comes back to us. Are we willing to make that investment? And I can tell you, when we go and we talk to the community, Senator Donnelly saw it when he met with the community in his meetings here.
They ready.
Folks tell us, we will pay more in taxes if you guarantee us it will go to public safety and not fund some pet project. Well, there are avenues that allow for that with things such as the public safety tax. That's dedicated to police and fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it can't be spent on other things.
Yeah, but
so we've got to make those tough decisions, and you know, our police officers are taxpayers too, Amos. They get it, but it comes down to we have to stop paying lip service to public safety.
Two quick things, Rick Snyder. There's been a perception in my community for many years that large numbers of IMPD officers did not live in the city and county, and the other week. It was either the chief or the public safety director, you know, in terms of, no, it was the chief of staff to the mayor put out that there was only 151 IMPD officers that live outside the county. That's 15%, of the force. Whatever the number was, 15%, and that just surprised all of us who thought, again, perception, not the actual reality.
Well, and I understand that. This is what I would suggest to you. It's a very low proportion compared to many other communities, especially large cities. And when you want to aggressively recruit the best and the brightest, and well, I would just ask you, you know, a Lilly isn't going to limit themselves to where their employees can live.
Right.
Now, I understand the value of having officers living in the community that they serve, but there's also we also have to start also thinking realistically about things. We're talking about being a metropolitan police department.
Right.
You know, the reason why state law allows for officers, it's state law that allows that, to live in a surrounding county. Also, you got to go back and put it in context. That also came from breaking up political fiefdoms as well.
Mm-hmm.
That came from saying that you don't retain your employees within the same, or require them to live in the same geographical area where they have to politically then elect you so that they keep their job.
Oh, okay.
So it's important to remember why those things came about. You know, in that issue, yeah, so there's 15% utilizing those numbers. I can assure you there's other areas in the city government, especially in public safety, where there's probably more that live out of the county than that, than the police. So we've got to be take this with a realistic approach as to what it is that we're trying to achieve here.
One final thing, Rick Snyder with the FOP. There are people listening right now who might be thinking, okay, the person that allegedly killed that officer is African American. Police officers are upset and angry. They've lost one of their own. They've lost a family member. And there might be a fear of some that over the next days and weeks, police may be overly aggressive, overly disrespectful of people in my community just cause they're upset and angry that somebody from my community did this to one of them. What would you say, you know, on behalf of your members to my community that might be feeling that today? I mean, they have strong sympathy towards the officer, towards the Wren family. Many know of the work that Officer Wren did over the years. But how would you, again, is perception, misperception, how would you would deal with the feelings of some?
I understand that perspective. I understand that concern. I would humbly say this. You're talking about very professionally trained police officers who deal with multiple cultures, multiple ethnicities on a daily basis. And we all understand one thing. This is why we don't treat people who everyone that we interact with, we approach it with an officer safety mindset, because it's very well understood and very well ingrained in us that anyone can hurt us or try to hurt us if they choose to do so. And we have to be protective of that. What I can say is I do think we need to look at, and that's the point you made earlier, of getting back to basics. And what I mean by back to basics is policing. We cannot be all things to all people anymore. And when our city's under attack and criminals are terrorizing our community, we have to confront that. But what I can tell you is that our officers are professional. They're going to be very deliberate in how we police this city. But that also means treating everybody the same. And we take that very seriously. And, I understand the concern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's valid. We're beyond that. I can tell you who needs to be fearful are criminals. And that's the problem. There is no fear amongst criminals in our city right now, because they see the vacuum. They see the compromised position. Why are people so brazen to commit the crimes that they're doing? Because they know their chances of getting caught are a lot less. When they believe that their chances of getting caught are really good because the community supports the police and the community is going to call us and tell us when they see something happening,
mm-hmm.
that changes the whole dynamic. And I would suggest to you that's one of the biggest challenges that we have to get over right now. How did we have 6 people shot on the Broad Ripple Avenue
and no
witnesses coming forward?
There's still no witnesses.
How does that happen? How do we have major crimes and catastrophes in our city, and we can't get people to talk to us?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I get that it's a trust factor, but it's a trust factor because we have this revolving door in our criminal justice system where even if we lock up the bad guy, there's nothing that says they're going to stay there very long. And that's a huge issue for us to confront here.
Finally,
and that takes away the trust that somebody has in terms of telling you what happened. But we can overcome that. We can continue to build upon the trust that we have. And we have a good level of that right now. And Chief Hyde just said it this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've made some significant deposits in the trust bank. And we're going to have to make some withdrawals here as we move forward in terms of saying, hey, listen, we need your help. We need your assistance here. We've demonstrated that you can trust us, but you now have to do your part.
Right.
You have to come forward and give us the information that we need. Otherwise, none of us succeed here.
And finally, Rick Snyder, people can pay their respects on Thursday out of Crown Hill on 38th Street. I believe, is it 2 to 8 or 2 to 10?
It's 2 to 8 p.m.
2 to 8 p.m., and then the state funeral, we call it in our community, homegoing, is at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, 11 a.m. on Friday.
Yes, sir, and the public's encouraged to attend both of those events. A lot of times, what we also see, and I can't express to you the impact that it makes on our officers, is the outpouring of support when our neighbors, folks in our community, line the streets of that procession and show their support.
And that procession will be probably when we're on the air on Friday, and it will move past North District.
Yes, sir.
Off of 30th Street in Washington Park. So, you know, probably out there on the east side of the city, 30th, 38th Street. Yeah, going back toward the section of heroes.
Right.
At Crown Hill, Rick Snyder, we appreciate the opportunity to have our audience and our community hear from officers, through you. On this day, and it's very appropriate, and we know we will be continuing these discussions and dialogue with you and members of law enforcement as we figure out, okay, what do we do? How do we pay for it? And I know you can't make editorial comments, but we can give up some cricket fields. We can give up some frills around here if that means, you know, making sure the officers have the armament they need, the bullets they need, the gasoline they need, the resources they need, the intelligence they need to do their job.
It's about priorities.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Rick Snyder. Thanks very much, the Vice President of FOP Local 86. When we come back, we'll talk to the folks with Eastern Star. We'll talk with you. We'll talk to Attorney Rod Bohannon, get his reaction to some of this, as well as this whole situation with illegal guns. I want to know. It's time we know who's selling this stuff. And how do they get away with not going to jail? In other words, if the bad guys are using the illegal guns, then it seems to me the person that's selling the illegal gun, why aren't they in jail? If you stop the illegal gun sellers, maybe that would stop some of this mess. Afternoons with Amos on a Tuesday.